Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. We're starting. So thank you all for showing up on this beautiful May 23rd, 2021 morning in Huntsville, Alabama. It's so great to see unmasked faces out there. For the longest time, I've been looking at eyes covered up, and now I can see smiles. There are still a few people who have decided to wear their masks. We have a sign outside the front door that says, if you haven't received your vaccination, please be safe and wear a mask. And so many of us are so familiar with this distancing thing. I noticed that people are still distancing in the congregation. And of course, every Boy Scout has mask will travel. So if you feel safe and you want to just be there's been some gifts from this pandemic. You know, I enjoy being safe. I haven't had the flu. I haven't had any allergies. You suppose there's a consequence? Jody Rutenberg is nodding her head. Yeah, so maybe we have been blessed in a strange sort of way by this challenge. Let's call it a challenge. It was a pandemic that could have potentially killed a lot of people, but hopefully a lot of people have awakened to the value of science, and I really cherish that, you know, to be awake. It was Socrates that said the unexamined life isn't worth living. So could we be willing to not only examine the life that we've been given, but to examine the life here on planet Earth, and know that this Earth is fragile, and if we don't wake up to our interconnectedness with some spiritual ecology, we very easily, I think the planet has the pandemic. I remember when the AIDS crisis was in the 80s, I realized that the planet had AIDS. And so as we used science again to transform ourselves, and no longer is AIDS a deadly disease, but people are actually living with AIDS. And what I thought was a plague in the gay community turned out to be a strange kind of blessing and awoke humanity. I think the heart of humanity awoke. I know mine certainly did during that time. So we are evolving as a species, and I am so grateful for that. This month, I'm talking about the necessity of being. It's called the art of being. And who are you being? Emerson says, what you are speaks so loudly, I don't hear a thing you say. I was reading my Emerson essays this week, and I decided not to bring him because he is so convoluted, but he speaks to my soul more deeply than just about anybody. And Emerson will speak a language that's very in your face. He says, absolve you to yourself. He says, the counting, thinking, ambitious man, to him we do not give a fig. But he says, to the soul. He says, when the soul is awakened within the individual, that's where genius, that's where compassion, that's where true leadership comes. And so his whole message is to have self-reliance, and that's reliance on the self that we all share. And when he says, absolve you to yourself, he's asking us to really tend this self within the self that wants to emerge. And he'll say things like, your finite self, that's the part of you that wails and suffers. But at the same time, there is this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose. And he invites us to discover what that is. And when we do, that's where we express. That's where the gifts of spirit come from. This Sunday, I'm talking about what gifts do you bring to this world? And so Emerson would say, there is a stream whose source is hidden, and from whence it comes I know not. So there is this fluidic something called life, called awareness, called presence, called love. And he says, and when it shows up, he said, I am a pensioner, I draw from that something. So he's kind of pointing the way there. Could we access this essential self? And you know, when we teach ministerial classes, we always teach a class prior to the ministerial called Living the Essential Self, because it's important to discover who we are before we decide what we're going to do. And when this self awakens in an artist, it paints, or maybe it dances, or maybe it ponders the imponderable. And if your Panhurti's son, Joseph, is a scientist, and he explores things like the coronavirus so that we can all be safe. This brilliant little kid in our nursery school has turned out to be a scientist with so much desire to serve at a greater level. So each one of us, our challenge is to discover what that is for ourselves. It was Rumi that said, we've each been given this divine purpose in our soul. And he says, if you do everything and you fail to discover what that is, it's as if you were never here. He said, it's as if someone gave you a beautiful silver scabbard and you hung it on the wall and you hung potholders on it. Now, his metaphor is a little lacking, but he's basically saying, we get to find out why this soul that you've been so beautifully blessed with, an eternal soul, what is its gift here on this earth? And at 72 years of age, I'm still staying in that question. Who am I to be so that I can do my doing from that being? I realize that I am here to be a calm, loving, spacious awareness, to accept all thoughts as they arise, to embrace the shadow as it shows up, especially when it shows up within myself. And if I can embrace that shadow part of me, and we're teaching this wonderful class by Parker Palmer, he talks about integrity as being an integrated human being. So when those unhealed parts of ourselves show up, we don't exile them anymore. Beautiful Charlotte was here this morning. Her husband had quadruple bypass, and we found out just 15 minutes ago he's getting out of the ICU and he's going into her room. He's getting a private room and tears are down, tears of joy. And Charlotte said when he started having the pains in his chest and they were radiating down his arm, he was popping those nitroglycerin pills like candy under his tongue and they weren't a-working. And so reluctantly they went to the hospital and it was the best thing they ever did because, again, the science through the quadruple bypass, he has no pain at all. And Charlotte said, I was in so much fear, and David was in so much fear, and I tried to exile the fear, get rid of the fear. And I said, stop getting rid of the fear. If you hadn't been afraid, you probably wouldn't have gone to the hospital and you wouldn't be here. So fear has a positive intent. You know, there's a Christian saying that perfect love casts out all fear. Why are you going to cast out the fear when the fear is showing you how to navigate? So there's a healthy kind of a fear, the fear that would say, put on your mask if you're in company and you don't feel safe. Then you don't have to. I went to the DMV this week. Is that what they call it? The Department of Motor Vehicles? Because they sent me some fakakta thing in the mail that said my insurance wasn't in my car and you can't drive it. And I didn't have the proper paper, so I just went in there. And on the door, it says masks preferred. And so I walk into this highly computerized system. You go through the checking gate where the police guard you as you go through their security thing. They didn't have masks on, but everything else was masked. It felt so safe. It felt so respectful. But being that I'm a little older than most people, you had to go to the computer and figure out which particular thing you were looking for. And there were like 100 choices. And I had one of those senior moments. There was a lady in the wheelchair. She was getting help from the policemen. And I said, when you're finished with her, could you help this old fellow as well? And I didn't know what to push. I went through. Now, in our satsang this week, Glory G did a beautiful meditation. In that meditation, she said, when your anxiety shows up, it's there to transform you. Oh, I had never thought of anxiety in that such positive way. So my anxiety had showed up, and I turned to this person, and I said, I don't know, where do you get one of these? And this young person, like Jake, pushed the button. It was done. One moment of question, one moment of answer, and I was free of anxiety. So what if when those parts of us show up, you know, critical Curtis, shaming Sam, instead of getting rid of shaming Sam, say, oh, there you are, saying you could do better, pretty is as pretty does, and you know, and then you can smile because you're no longer triggered by the fear, by the anxiety, by the guilt. I have this beautiful old dog, Bert, and T and Shay stopped by the other day to just put some love into him. And from one day to the next, it's so tentative whether he's going to stay on this planet. And in a strange sort of way, it's given me the gift of holding every day as so sacred. Every day is a blessing. And they're not good days or bad days, they're just birthdays. Al knows what I'm talking about. I think he's rallying again. And then I'm feeling guilty because if I go to Maine, and why do I want to leave this addled old pup with a beautiful lady like Jody? And she says, who but better than me to do that? And I said, you know, you're absolutely right. So what if in this lifetime, we're not here to take the gifts we have to shame those parts of our life that we don't like, but in a paradoxical way, to integrate all those unhealed parts of ourself so that we can become a whole organism. There was a lot of talk this morning in our revealing service about this phrase called God. And it can be kind of onerous if you don't have a healthy understanding of it as something intimate. And I've been working my whole life to develop that, because if our gifts come from God, well, then what kind of God do I have? Is it a shaming, wrathful God who says you better do this and you better not sin? I don't have that God. My God would say sin boldly and have a good time doing it. What, David? And I decided for my friend Raul to go out. One of the greatest authorities on God is a Franciscan monk named Richard Rohr. And he speaks like Emerson does. He talks about God as a fluidic something, as life itself. And how each of us is that life, is that God. And when you use a metaphor like water, then we can maybe understand it, because the left brain can't conceptualize it. God isn't a concept to be had. God is a direct experience to be felt. And so here's Richard Rohr in his delightful, loving Franciscan way explaining what God is. He says, God is a riverbed of mercy. A riverbed that underlies all the ephemeral flotsam and jetsam of your life. That's something, that ground of being. He says, this riverbed is vast. It's silent. It's restful. And it's resourceful. It receives everything, and it also releases all the comings and goings. So it's not caught up in that which is impermanent. He says, it is awareness itself, as opposed to judgment or thinking. Now, here's a Catholic saying, God is not about judgment. It's about pure awareness. He's trying to raise our consciousness a little higher. And he says, it refuses to be pulled into the emotional mental tug of war that most humans have. To look out from this untouchable silence is to live from the soul space, where God dwells most generously within us all. To look out from that soul space. So who would you be giving your gift from this soul space? It's so beautiful to come right back to ground zero. How would God make herself manifest in your life? How would God love through you? How would God know through you? How would God make commitments through you? How would God play through you? How would God show up for the moment when life seems to be falling apart? So here he goes on to expound on that. No wonder spirit, with a capital S, is described as flowing water in John, the Gospel of John. It's described as a spring inside of you, also the Gospel of John. It's described as a river of life in the book Ezekiel. Remember, he's a Christian. And he says, your life is not really about you at all. You are a part of a much larger dynamic flow called life itself, or simply God. It's all about God. That's why we had this little sign made years and years ago, and I never took it down. It's about serving the one. It's not about God serving us. It's about us serving this presence, this love, this peace, this awareness that doesn't judge. Seamus was talking about his mind is the source of all his problems. So the question is, it's not that I don't care. It's that I don't mind. I don't have to put my mind in it anymore. I can put my heart in it. Lastly, he goes on to say, there is this river, and you're already in it. The river is God's infinite love. And without some awareness of being supported by and being a part of that which is always flowing, you will succumb to your ego's preoccupation, and you'll be trapped in your fears. If you don't know that what you are is that divine presence that's always flowing, Emerson, there is a stream whose source is hidden, and from whence it comes I know not, but when it shows up, I am a pensioner, I draw from that stream. So that's where the gifts from them come from. That's where the knowing comes from. That's where this beautiful compassion arises. That's where, I remember when Baby Speck was out all night, she chased the coyotes and there was a thunderstorm and she came back a mess. She was PTSD on steroids. And I called beloved Jody here in Huntsville and she says, you're no good to her if you're in a reactive state. She says, you need to find the gift of your peace, your calm, your love, and offer that to the baby. And, you know, Trey and I still were challenged with that, but the one who could do it better than anyone was old Bert. When she was shaking like a leaf and she wouldn't take her toy, Bert waddled over there and he says, oh, I'll take the toy. I don't like him, but I'll take it. And after a while, I realized that his spacious awareness is what calmed her down. And then they lay next to one another. So you see that we all have gifts. Even the four-leggeds have gift. Maybe especially the four-leggeds have gift. And they know what to do. We're teaching this wonderful class, and I like to teach classes that I really want to teach at this stage of my life, classes that I think are relevant for all of us. And what's more relevant than knowing that we're all on the brink of everything and that we get to face that brink? In our revealing service, some people are in really tenuous places. And then Jody did a beautiful spiritual mind treatment to say, wherever you are, that's the place, it's perfect for you at that particular time. And so in this lovely book, On the Brink of Everything, Parker Palmer talks about at age 80, he too is on the brink of everything, where he's realizing that there is no time in the eternal soul of our being. And he says, with your getting older, could we become a little wiser? This month I spoke one Sunday about resolve to evolve. Could we resolve to move out of the egoic personality that's always chasing after something out there and evolve into an eternal awareness that's always there, that has its creative gifts, that has its wisdom, and allow that to be our operating center, not this reactionary, grasping, pushing away part of ourself that suffers, but this deep abiding essence that is life itself, that is by its very nature free of the stuff of our own little self. And so in this book, he was at Naropa University. Now, Naropa University is in Boulder, Colorado, and it's a Buddhist university. A Buddhist university? Yeah, can you imagine the curriculum there about non-attachment, about emptiness? You know what emptiness, the whole concept of emptiness is, you're empty of your little self. And when you're empty of your little self, well, then who's there? Well, I guess it's the one life coming through. I guess it's the mind of God. Well, what do you think? Bert said, yep, that's what it is. You just have to get rid of you. Well, so he's speaking to the graduating class 2015 in Naropa, and he gave some precious advice. Essentially, what he's saying to these graduates is that each one of us has a gift. And when you find that gift, match that gift to a perceived need in the world. I was talking about Greta Thunberg, that little 18-year-old girl from Sweden, who realized that our planet is in dire need if it's to survive. And so she has devoted her gift of communication, and she communicates beautifully to large groups of people. And because she's so young, the younger generation are really hearing her, and they're linking up, they're getting connected. But she says, don't listen to my words. She says, listen to the science that I'm speaking. She's kind of like an Ally Shepherd. She's telling him like how it is. And if we don't awaken, we have hell to pay for. So here's what he said to this class. And I thought it merited just listening to it one more time. He says to them, the graduating class, he says, be reckless when it comes to matters of the heart. He says, fall madly in love with the life that you've been given. And he says, be passionate about some part of the natural and the human worlds. And take risks on its behalf, no matter how vulnerable that may make you. Really can have a conviction about something. Jody took me to a beautiful place last Sunday called the Feline and Canine Rescue Center, where just a handful of people are so deeply committed to saving the animals here in Alabama and all thereabouts. It was just so inspiring. Passionate about what you do. This woman came all the way from Chicago, even with cancer, and she's a gangbuster. She says, offer yourself to the world. Offer your energy. Offer your gifts. Offer your visions. Offer your spirit with an open-hearted generosity. An open-hearted generosity. Wow. It feels so good when you're in service to something other than yourself. What I thought was really sweet there at the Feline Canine Rescue Center, the volunteers come and they walk the dogs every single day. I think it's morning and night. And you can see that the dogs are so grateful. They come out of their cages. Jean Ann, I can see you over there walking those dogs, playing with those kitty cats. Offer yourself to the world, your energies, your gifts, your visions, and your spirit with an open-hearted generosity. And to grow in love and service, you must value ignorance just as much as you value knowledge, and you must value failure just as much as you value success. Isn't this great to tell a graduating class that you're going to have some failures? But those failures are turning points where you get to choose and do something else. Anybody been in a failed relationship? If they weren't wake-up calls, you weren't doing it right. You know, because ultimately you're having a relationship with yourself. So what if we could turn our failures into blessings? Lastly, he says, so my young fellow graduates, cultivate the beginner's mind and walk straight into your not knowing. You graduate from college. Let me tell you, you really don't have a clue once you graduate. Walk into your not knowing and take the risk of failing and falling again and again. And then he says, getting up to learn again and again. He said, that's the path of life, that it's lived large in service to love, in service to truth, in service to justice. And he says, be faithful to the gifts that you've been given. What a lovely commencement address. I wish I'd heard that when I graduated from college. You know, it was all about getting the biggest job with the highest paycheck, not following your heart and giving yourself fully, open-heartedly in service, where you're okay with falling down and making mistakes. So yeah, so the gifts that we're given, what would that look like in your life? I was reflecting on the many ways that I have awakened to the gifts. And when I was a young man, I would hear things from Shakespeare that says, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the ninth the day thou canst not be false to anyone. And so what does that mean to be true to yourself? That means, for me, not to let someone else tell me how I should be in this world. You know, my dad wanted me to be an attorney. My mom wanted me to be a doctor. And I wanted to dance. And so, well, what kind of smart kid goes into dance? Not because I was going to be a Baryshnikov, but because I recognized that through dance, spirit awoke in me. There was this creative something. And so when I was working on my master's in dance, and I was working on my dissertation, I did it on the anatomy of inspiration, and that took me into the creative process. William Butler Yeats, Mozart, who accessed this intelligence of the universe and literally would download it. And they would say, when the vision comes, if I don't take the vision when it arises, I lose the vision. So could we be playful with this Orphic voice that's offering itself to all of us in our own unique way and become committed in a relationship to that something that's so much bigger, to that divine life? And ultimately what you realize is then you can't settle for the small. Emerson, who's one of my great heroes, he followed the family plan. He was supposed to go into ministry. He did that. He became the pastor of the first church in Boston, a big work. He only realized he didn't like being a minister. He didn't like the pastoral thing. He didn't like the Christian tradition. He had discovered a spiritual truth that was so much greater through reading the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads. And so his very last sermon in that church in Boston was called The Last Supper. And he says, Jesus would never ask you to drink his blood and eat his flesh. He was sharing the Passover ceremony of the Jewish tradition. And so that was his last talk. But it took him into that place of not knowing, that place of falling down, where he trusted in this something to awaken within him eternally. And thank God he wrote those beautiful essays that would inspire a young David Leonard when he was growing up, not fitting into the system, but realizing there's something much greater than the system that we've all been handed. So could we give ourselves the permission to live uniquely the life that we've been given and to access the gifts that are ours to give? You know, I have a beautiful husband who is very, Jody calls him AR for a reason. He's very structured, and he's the perfect one to be the treasurer of the center. He's the perfect one to make appointments for Friends of Rescue because he's tedious, he's detailed, he's very left brain, and his gifts are in that thing. I'm far more of the abstract visionary who ponders what could be and then maybe moves toward that. He's far more of a sustainer, so his gifts are sustaining. And you know, I see his angelic face when he's sitting in our yard and he's hand-weeding the moss. You'd think there was a saint there weeding the moss because he loves to tend his garden. So what if our gifts are all unique to us, and it's not that one is right for another, that each one of us gets to be playful, how that would reveal itself. In our foyer out here, there's a painting, and it's called The Essential Self. And it was one of our classes that we taught here years ago, and the very last project, we would ask the students to teach a class. And that was a project that was made by Sharon Ledford and I think Grace Gifford. The two of them decided at the very last class that each of the students would be given a square. I remember Seamus had a square. And on that square, you were to write out what is the gift of my essential self that I'm going to give the world. And then in their creative way, they put each square on this thing. There's maybe 16 of them. And that's called the essential self. Each one is giving their gift. And it's very interesting. I look at mine sometime because I did it along with the students. My gift was just to be who you are. And there is a little smiley face with a kid, with a butterfly and a flower. Just be who you are. That's my gift. Some gifts say love. I think Seamus says transcend. I mean, somebody says grow. Each one is giving their gift from their soul so that it can be felt by the soul. Not so it can be put in the head and we can say, is that one right and that one wrong? No, 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 no. It's all the accurate expression of the soul. The soul doesn't have a preference. But what I've discovered is that our soul oftentimes gathers its gifts from the life that we've been given. It was Jean Ann that reminded me that she's been listening to a lot of Louise Hay. Now, Louise Hay has kind of an intimate relationship with me because my teacher was Dr. Kennedy Schultz in Atlanta, and his teacher was Raymond Charles Barker in the big New York City church. Now, Raymond Charles Barker was a big deal, so he'd be my spiritual grandfather, I guess. And one of his students was Louise Hay. And Kennedy, my teacher, always just thought Louise Hay was a little flippy. He said, oh, she just talks love all the time, loving yourself. But you know what happened to Louise Hay? She graduated from ministerial school, became a practitioner. She had the grace of developing cancer. And through the grace of cancer, she actually healed herself at many, many levels. And with that healing, she wrote a book, You Can Heal Your Life. And so much of what Louise Hay does is does the deeper healing. Part of the deeper healing, it's not about the cancer. She had cancer, and she equated it to many of the belief systems that she had. She was sexually abused. So part of her healing was not just to get rid of the cancer, but was to forgive all those that abused her. So she had to learn, I forgive myself. I forgive all past experience. Forgiving myself, forgiving others, I am free, I am free. So there's one of the first steps of healing. Another one of her steps of healing was stop frightening yourself and scaring yourself to death. It's just a word, cancer, it's just a word, heart attack. You don't have to be terrified when you hear that. It's just a word, COVID-19. So when we stop scaring ourselves, we can actually use the science, the common sense, to navigate in a more proactive way. So she was what you call maybe a wounded healer. She had this wound. So I remember she came to Atlanta, 1982. The AIDS crisis was at its peak. And she would hold in Los Angeles what they called the hay rides. All these young men that were dying of AIDS would come to her apartment, and she would give them mirror work, look into the mirror, and say to that young man, I love and accept you just the way you are. When I studied with her, it was maybe a room of 1,000 people, she would pass this little mirror around. I would swear to God, people couldn't do it. People cannot look in their face and say, I love and accept you. It was the hardest damn thing. So then her instruction for all of us was, when you get up in the morning, the first thing I want you to do is go to the bathroom and put one hand on the hot faucet, one hand on the cold faucet, look into that mirror and tell that person, I love you and I accept you just the way you are. I started practicing that, and it took a while to love and accept, because there's so much shame that goes on in so many of us. You know, we have this judgment. So her healing was at such a deeper level. Even those that would offend you, you know, she would say, she would imagine, like the one that abused her sexually, imagine them as a little tiny child, the size of maybe a thumb, Tom Thumb, and put that little child in your heart. So you're healing yourself of the idea of them as the perpetrator that harmed you. She gave us all these beautiful meditations and chants to do the healing work, and it's still valid. My friend Jean Ann has been listening to her on YouTube. So if you're out there and you want a wounded healer to help guide you, because you know what Louise was doing all that time? She was just giving her gifts. And they were, and my teacher Kennedy says, you know why she's so powerful, don't you, David? And I said, no, why is she so powerful, Ken? He says, because she has empirical knowledge. That's like my beloved Michael here. He has empirical knowledge. He can help people in recovery because he's been there. You know, I've been in a shitty relationship and came out the other end healed. I can help people with relationships. And that's why I chose Jody Rutenberg to teach that class with me, because she's had some unhealed relationships. What if it's through that tough time that we develop the thread of our gifts? So that leads me to my beloved Mark Nepo, who explains it so beautifully. This is a man who is, he's a poet of the soul. And he says the very, very thing here. He says, we each arrive with a gift that's hidden in a wound, and we have many years to birth it, many years to birth our gift. Each is given a heart to carry and rough seas to calm. Each of us is seated with a worthiness and love after love through which to accept it, to know that you're worthy, you know. Each is called to enter sorrow like an underwater cave, with the breathless chance to break surface in the same world with an everlasting glow. When you dive deep into the grief and the sadness, you can surface with a glow on you to realize that there really is no death. All that died was the form. Jake was here during the early times helping put up flowers and setting up the table, and I was listening to Jack Fowler, and he was singing a song to his dog who just transitioned. It was a golden lab. And the song was, "We Don't Have to Say Goodbye." And I could feel the grief in his words. But he says, "You left so much love behind that I don't have to say goodbye to you, that you're still here." And for some reason, that made me feel good. See, he's giving the gift of his own wound of losing his pet to help me face the potential loss of my old dog, Bert. I'm still getting tearful. He says, if we make it this far, we can, on any given day, simply marvel that clouds are clouds, and we can name ourselves anew. We can use the gift that's born of our wound to find an unmarked spot from which we can live. And if we settle there, giving our all without giving ourselves away, then the heart within our heart will flower, and the whole world will drink of its nectar. Wow. The heart within our heart will flower, and we can let this nectar from the life experience be offered to the world. So then we're really not the doer. Our heart is the doer, the heart within the heart. And we just show up being that, and being that loving presence. When we went to the feline canine rescue, I was reminded of a young man who I met in Phoenix, Arizona. And his ministry, his gift, was to go to the pound where they were euthanizing the animals, and he would give them their last walk before they put them down, and he would validate them. And I remember thinking at the time, how could anybody do... It's that tickle again. Do that. But he said, it is the most fulfilling and rewarding thing to let them know that their life mattered. And I said, thank you for doing that. So each one of us gets to find the way we give our gifts in the world. And there's not a wrong way or a right way. So get playful with yourself. You know, the greatest gift, I think, as my teacher also said, is the greatest gift we can give someone is time. You know, give them the time to just be with, to listen to one another, just to hold each other in each other's arms. I'm so glad Jake came early, because Gigi used to come early, and I had 3 hours to kill because my prayer partner was unavailable today. And just to have time with Jake and put up flowers and just to be in those simple things. Time is such a sacred thing that we have with one another. So I was asking myself, who's someone that really gives their gifts? And I was flooded by so many. Gandhi. Oh, and I was lying in bed this morning thinking of Nelson Mandela. I was at the Parliament of World Religions in 1999, and I went to Robben Island. And here's a man who was incarcerated for 27 years. Thank you. You're so thoughtful. 27 years. And during that time, when all these Africans were being imprisoned just for simply being black, there was a lot of anger and resentment there. But he developed the consciousness that said, we're going to call this the university. And so he would preach this gospel of not revenge and resistance and getting even, but of compassion and forgiveness. And so after 27 years, when he was released and they were all released, and he became the head of South Africa, he brought the gift of reconciliation, not the gift of revenge. What a beautiful man who'd done the work on himself so that when he was finally liberated, he could offer that consciousness to the world. Who he was so important. So he's just one of many, many examples. But the one I chose to highlight is a friend of Gigi's and mine. It's a young man named Matty Stepanek who died at age 13. And he had a very rare muscular dystrophy thing. His siblings all passed away. There were so many children that passed. So from the time he was little, he knew that he was terminal, that he wouldn't live long. But he made it his mission to sing his heart songs. This is the Journey Through Heart Songs with Matty Stepanek. And he was saying, I have to give my gift to the world. And so he wrote his poetry. And in his poetry, he wrote from the wounded place so that he could help heal that wounded place. So let me give you a taste of Matty, and then we'll launch into a closing meditation. This is very moving stuff. So here's in November 1994, he's age 11. He said, this is what I call the poem, the Matty Book. This is what his book would be at 11. Sometimes, he says, I wish I could be in a book. And the book would have lots and lots of pages. And when everyone reads it, they would know about Jamie, about Katie, about Stevie. Those are his siblings that no longer were alive. They would know about God, and they would know about life. They would know about love, and they'd know about heaven. And they'd know about playing, and feelings, and rainbows, and feathers, and mommies, and peacemakers, and dinosaurs, and friends, and all the other important things of life. And all the pages of this book would have lots and lots of words that are filled with Matty's thoughts and Matty's heart song. And they would live, and they would teach, and they would be saying, hooray for life! Forever and ever, even after I'm gone. That was his message. I am not going to die. Hooray for life, forever and ever and ever. Boy, what an inspiring little kid who saw those go before him, and yet he was saying, we don't die. And then he did this little gift of hope, and this is for Gene and me, because God knows we need hope on the planet right now, for our democracy, for the planet itself, for people at the border who are minorities, who are struggling in cages. We need hope for those who are suffering physically, for the four-leggeds, the two-leggeds, the seas. So here's his beautiful poem for hope. This was written in May of 1999. He says, I need a hope. I need a new hope. A hope that reaches for the stars and that does not end in violence or war. I need a hope that makes peace on our earth and it does not create evil in the world. I need a new hope that finds cures for all diseases and that does not make people hurt in their bodies, in their hearts, or most of all, to hurt in their spirit. I need a new hope, a hope that inspires me to live and to make all these things happen so that the whole world can join with me and have a new hope too. So, yeah, have a new hope. I'm hoping for water. And I realize that hope. Ask and you shall be given. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and the door shall be opened. So what if it starts with seeking? Seeking the peace. Huh? And then the peace arises. Hoping for a country that embraces all beings, and then feel that inclusive nature In the Center for Spiritual Living, we embrace all and exclude none. So every religion is invited here. Everyone who has no religion is invited here. Whether you're a heathen, you're invited. Whether you're an addict, you're invited. Whether you're a dog or a cat, you're invited. Whatever you are, in the oneness, how could anything be excluded? And oneness, by its very nature, celebrates diversity. So we stop and we turn within. And we listen. Emerson calls it lowly listening. Joseph Campbell calls it following your bliss. Satchitananda, consciousness, being, bliss. So could we enter into that riverbed, that ground of that riverbed, and discover the Satchitananda, that beautiful awakened presence that longs to be revealed by means of each one of us? And then when that presence reveals itself, say, yes, this life belongs to you. Use it as you will. And then we allow. First is the recognition of the gift of life, the gift of presence, the gift of love, the gift of imagination, so many gifts, the gift of generosity of heart, the gift of tenderness and kindness. The second stage is a realization, to realize that's what we really are. We really are that peace that passes all understanding. We really are that love that knows no other. We really are that creative intelligence that's filled with the totality of possibilities, to realize it in this lifetime. The third aspect of giving our gift is to stabilize it. That's why we come to the revealing services. That's why we take classes. That's why we come to the Dharma Recovery Group, to stabilize this presence, this clarity, this love, this hope. The fourth stage is to participate in the world, to engage with others, to serve with the many, so that we realize that we're not alone here, that every time we walk a dog at the rescue center, we are the ones that are given the grace and the blessing. And the last aspect of the gift is we must give it. We must express it. We must give it away so that the world can receive it. And so I invite you to touch that gift of your own beingness, a new order of being, being human, being divine, being awake, being ready, caring. And then through lowly listening, make a commitment to offer that gift in simple little ways. Charlotte left our revealing service to rush to the hospital, and she said, I'm going to take every step on my way up there as if every step is a prayer and a blessing. So she was giving her gift through conscious action, through walking with intention. There's this beautiful silence that's always there. Silence is the language of God. And that silence doesn't happen when thoughts abide or stop or people stop talking. It happens when we just open and recognize that it's always been there. Be still. And in that stillness, there is the knowing of this presence. So from that place of awakened awareness, from that commitment, an intention to serve a greater something, let's join in our heart salutation by saying together, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the sweetest aspect of my soul.
You are the sweetest aspect of my soul.
The beloved presence within me.
The
Bows to the beloved presence in you.
Bows to the beloved presence in you.
In this spaciousness we are whole.
In this spaciousness we are whole.
Integrated.
Integrated.
And alive.
And alive.
As one life.
As one life.
Revealed eternally.
Revealed eternally.
Open your hands, open your heart. Let your light so shine. And have fun while you're doing it. Go out and kiss a puppy dog or a kitty cat. Hug a friend. And be who you are. Thanks for sending in your tithes, everyone. Mwah. I love you guys.
For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You are love and you are light. Namaste. Yeah.